Okay, reading from Jivadharma, chapter 8. It's Nitya Dharma and Vaishnava behavior. Om Jnanatimanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Nulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So, when part of Jivadharma, it's a very beautiful scene where the Vaishnavas are assembling at in Godrum Dweep. It's the island that exemplifies Kirtan in Mayapur. We're following the story of these Babaji's. Babaji literally means respectable people. And Vaishnavism, it's usually given, the term is usually given to people who are really Paramahamsas. There's four stages of, well, in this case it is, there's four stages of renunciation. There's Kudichak, Bahudak, Parivrajakacharya, and Sannyas. So in the previous spiritual culture, people understanding the eternality of the soul and the necessity to realize the self. One second, I'm losing my voice, so I have to get some kind of throat lozenge. People realizing the necessity to realize the self and understanding that when you have a broad vision, old age is just like the merciful indication from God that this body is temporary. And the temporary body is meant to realize the eternal soul. And therefore, the end of the life, which on the material platform is purposefully doomed, is meant for self-realization. And as one gets older and one has lived his life in a proper way, one has worked through one's desires in a way that one can become detached from them. And old age is like that. Even people without spiritual knowledge, when they get older, they can, their sensuous desires can be reduced. What to speak of people with spiritual acumen, where the culture supports that, they can become relatively renounced. But it's a difficult process because, you know, we set up the world for our own enjoyment and comforts, and hopefully the comforts and enjoyment we need to keep stable and peaceful for realizing the goal of life. But what happens is, whenever things are lined up according to our desires, it tends to put us in a material consciousness, or it can put us in a material consciousness, where we see the world as an object for our desires. Just like I'm here in Govardhan and I'm trying to shift my consciousness from seeing Govardhan as something in my world, I look at it. And I look at everything else, it's one of the things in my world, to I am in the world of Govardhan. I am the world of God. I am in the world of Guru. I am the object for the pleasure of God. It's a shift in consciousness from one of overly significance to reasonable insignificance. Reasonable because we are. Even I thought in my present life, I'm in a good period on a material platform. And I pray not to get attached. Things are reasonably going my way. So when things are reasonably going your way, I can see it tends to put you in a mood of subject or seer, and everything else is the object or seen. So this is a story of fairly renounced people and people who aren't, who come to them spiritual guidance. Now, in this part of the story, they're meeting all these renowned, there's different groups, communities of renounced people, and they're meeting and they're discussing spiritual topics, and we're privileged to be the witness of it. And they're at a particular place now, and they're assembled. And there are a lot of great souls there. Hari Das Babaji is over 100 years old. Vaishnav Das Babaji, he's previously an impersonalist. He's a great now Vaishnav scholar. And Paramahamsa Babaji, he's at the highest level of devotion. And a relatively new person named Nityananda Das, he begins to ask about Vaishnav behavior. And the answer is that a Vaishnava behaves according to his level of realization. And there's basically three levels of realization. One is Kanista Adhikari. Now, he's a Vaishnava. He accepts that there's a supreme God and we're part of God. But he tends to see only God in the temple, only God in the form of the deity. And he's not very deep in an understanding of the divinity. And he doesn't see God in others. And we see that. We see that in fanatic religions. They worship God, and they can kill others, they can exploit others, they can behead others, they can do so many things. So that tendency, and that may not even be Kanishtha Adhikari, but the tendency to, at the beginning, to worship God and not extend the understanding of God to others. So, and then there's the Madhyama Adhikari, where he has an understanding, a mature understanding of God and God's energies. And because he has that understanding, he's come to a firm conviction that the goal of life, actually seeing reality, he understands the goal of life is to serve reality, that we're part of something greater, and our function or duty is to serve that which is greater. a part in a machine is of the machine, it's for the machine, and its value is in the machine. We are part of something. Our value is in what we are part of. And one understands that clearly and understands pure devotion. He understands pure devotion. He actually starts to feel it in his heart. And he sees that we should worship God. We should make friends with the devotees. We should show compassion to people who don't have spiritual knowledge. And we should neglect those who are inimical, which means we don't engage intimately and share our hearts and our spiritual conceptions with those who are inimical, even if we have family or social or occupational relationships with them. So this Nityananda Das is really asking more clarification on this. I'm trying to find out what happened to my notes. It's only such a... Okay. So he's he's asking about Kanishtha Adhikari now. And this Haridas Babaji is answering, accepting his guru, and he wants to actually understand further. So he asked, what are the characteristics of a Kanishtha Bhakta? And the Babaji answers that the primary characteristic is his faith in the form of God and his worship of the deity. And his secondary characteristics are the devotional activities that he performs, like chanting, hearing, etc. So he understands, he can understand. Yes, of course, you can't be a Vaishnava unless you have faith in the form of God and you worship the deities according to the regulations. But he couldn't understand why chanting and hearing and remembering their secondary activities. And and then Haridas Babaji, he answers them that because they don't yet have a conception, that a really firm realization that worship of God, worship of the deity, is our intrinsic nature to actually serve and give ourselves. And therefore, whatever they do is so much tinged with their own personal motives that even the chanting and hearing and all these activities are done with a materialistic conception. And we can also fall in that. We can perform devotional activities not to please Krishna, but out of prestige even. It's so easy to perform things out of prestige or with the conception of liberation. It's only for my happiness alone. And there's so many contaminations that can enter into our personal practices. So Nityananda says, well, then how can the Kanishtha Adhikari be a devotee when his heart is filled with desires for so many other things other than bhakti? And then the Babaji, you know, will tell him that somehow to be even a beginner in devotional service, even if you're mixed, you have to have shraddha. You have to have some faith, some belief in the form of God and the personal nature of God. So somehow or other, one has that. We see that. We see people that have faith in the deity. They have faith in God, but they're not very deep. They don't take seriously to the process of chanting and hearing. They don't respect the devotees of God. But somehow or other, they're still devotees, but they're Kanishtha Vaishnavas. They're at the beginning. So Nityananda then asks, well, when will they obtain bhakti? And he says, well, when they come to the next level, then they become a Shuddha Bhakta, where they don't have this desire for karma and gyan. That's not their objective. They don't practice devotional service to get something material or for any reason of prestige or to get liberation. But they really, really, even if they're not at the most advanced platform, they really, really understand that they want to please Krishna. They really desire nothing than the pleasure of Krishna. They may be fallen, or at least they understand that. And then they can come into the practice of Uttama Bhakti. The practice of Uttama Bhakti doesn't mean that you're pure, but it means that you desire to become pure and that you practice to become pure. You don't practice for material reasons or for liberation. You have an intention to please Krishna. And somehow or other, that becomes. And then when that happens, this is a very important point. When that happens, one understands the importance of associating with devotees and how different that is from ordinary people. Well, someone's a Kanishtha Adhikari, okay, that's his god. He understands the form of God. But there'll be so many people, relatives, guests, devotees, it doesn't matter. They have no distinction in that way. They can't see the value of someone who's on this path. And therefore, they have so many relations. And they don't see any difference between having a dinner for their friends and for serving pure Vaishnavas. And then as one becomes advanced, one develops a ruchi or a strong desire that I should serve the devotees. I should serve those in whose heart is pure and has a desire to serve Krishna. So Nityananda Das is listening to this, and this distinction is made. He's kind of meditating on it. Okay, well, this is Vaishnava behavior. And when you become more advanced, you develop a desire to serve the devotees more. And you understand the value of serving the devotees. And you can distinguish that from ordinary guests who, and family, who you may treat nicely and you may serve, etc. But you understand the value of serving those who are dedicated to pure devotional service. So Nityananda Das begins to reflect that Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotion, appears along with Sambandhagyan, along with a realization of reality. You have an understanding that I'm not the body, I'm not God, God is not matter. You have a firm conception, because if you think God is matter, I described this many times, why would you worship God? Or if you think you're God, then what's the impetus, what's the love to worship God? Or if you think you're the body and meant to enjoy and control, you won't worship God. So he understands and he expresses to Haridas, I understand that this Shuddha Bhakti, this exclusive anya bilashita shunya, like where you desire nothing but the service of Krishna. That's what purity means. That's what love of Godhead means. It's a desire, and a desire that increases, that you want to serve. You want to serve God. You want to serve everything. And give your life. It's a realization that comes. That is the ultimate reality. I'm of God. I'm for God. That's the ultimate reality. And I want to live in that reality. And now I understand that this is reality. So Nityananda Das becomes curious that, well, when does this kind of realization awaken where one becomes eligible for Shuddha Bhakti? Because if you don't have Sambandhagyan, you don't have a basic understanding that you're not the body, you're not God, and God is not matter, not material. You don't have a realization of this to some depth. You won't serve God. Why? Why would you serve God if you think God's illusion and material? Or if you think you're God? Or if you have a material objective? So he understands that without hearing about this and learning about this, and applying this and seeing this and realizing this, without that conception or idea and those thoughts, then one won't take the pure devotional service. Because one moves according to one's ideals. If you don't think something's important, or if you don't think something is true, why will you dedicate your life to it? So the Babaji explains that this understanding and this desire to serve manifests simultaneously when the contaminations of impersonalist Mayavad has been dispelled in the heart. So, unless those misconceptions, I know I'm invited to speak in one yoga studio, and they asked me to clear up these misconceptions. Because if you think that Krishna's form is material, and you don't believe there's an ultimate object of love of which you can have an exchange with, then this is a tremendous obstacle to having a proper conception of life and therefore acting within the proper conception of life, which is called pure devotional service. So Nityananda asks, well, how long does this take for these misconceptions to be dispelled? And Babaji says, it depends on one's past sukriti. The stronger that is, this sukriti, this past conceptions, these past deeds, these past associations, this faith, and I'm really harping on this point, it's a sense in the mind that allows one to experience God. If the mind is dirty, distorted, haunted, then one won't be attracted. You can see we all come with a variety of sukriti, variety of past deeds. And therefore we have proclivities and attractions to different degrees. And the attraction for bhakti is due to our past association with it. When you associate with God and the objects and the devotion to God, that connection transfers a certain potency of devotion that gives us a proclivity or attraction for it. So to the degree that you've had that association is the degree that you will have attraction for it in this life. And we see someone may come new and is so sincere and so dedicated. So in a previous life, he had so much of this kind of connection. Prabhupada said no one can come to Krishna consciousness without some previous connection to it. Of course, Prabhupada said even if one has no connection by the mercy of a devotee. But the basic thing is, so he's asking, well, what is the first result you get in your life from this sukriti? From this previous connection with objects and acts of devotion. Like, think of your practice this life, and then maybe you don't complete it in your next life. What will be the result of your chanting and your devotional service? Or even what's the result of your maybe my mother, who's come to Vyasa Puja and has appreciated the devotees somehow. Or even my older brother who came. Or my family who kind of respects me. What will be the result attained by this kind of sukriti, good deeds in bhakti, bhakti sukriti? What will be the result? And Babaji says, one attains sadhu sangha. That is the result of past good deeds in connection with devotion, whether they are known or ajata sukriti, whether they are unknown. It's sadhu sangha. That's the benefit of good deeds in bhakti. Nityananda Das, and what is the progression that evolves from sadhu sangha? So what happens then when you get sadhu sangha? So Babaji quotes a verse which describes the systematic evolution of bhakti very succinctly. Babaji said, this verse will describe it. Satam pasangam mamavirya sampado bhavanti vitkarna rasayana kata tajoshana dhyash papavarga vartmani shradha ratir bhakti anukramishyati. As a result of full-hearted association with pure devotees, one gets the opportunity to hear descriptions of my heroic deeds, which are like nectarian tonic for the ears and the heart. By repeatedly relishing those topics through hearing and contemplation, one successively and quickly attains sadha, rati, and prema bhakti towards me and becomes free from anartha. So what happens is you get faith, and that faith matures through the different stages by associating with sadhu sangha and hearing the hearing about Krishna. So this is how this works. And then Nityananda asks, how does one attain sadhu sangha? Well, how do you get this? And Babaji says, I've already said that sadhu sangha is attained by sukriti, acquired in previous births. This is explained in the Bhagavatam, 10:51-53. Bhavapavargo brahmato yadapavej janasyata yakshuta satsamagama satsangamo yahi tadaiva shakato paravareshe twayi jayate viti. O Achyuta, the jiva has been wandering in the cycle of birth and death since time without beginning. When the time for his release from the cycle approaches, he obtains sadhu satsang. From that moment, he becomes firmly attached to you with a controller of both spat, matter, and spirit, and the supreme goal of attainment for the sadhus. Anyway, I guess it's great fortune when that time arises, you get some sukriti. Oh, you miss. Nityananda Das, it is only by sadhu sangha that a kanishtha bhakta awakens an inclination to worship the deity. So how can it be said that he doesn't render any service to the sadhus? Babaji, when by good fortune one obtains sadhu sangha, vishwas, belief in the deity, divinity of the deity awakens. Nonetheless, worship of the deity must be accompanied by service to the sadhus themselves. Until this type of faith develops, one's shraddha is incomplete and one remains ineligible for nanya bhakti. So you get shraddha, tatosadha. So you get this faith in divinity, but you have to come to the stage of sadhu sangha. You have to have faith, yes, faith that you appreciate God, but you have to have faith that I should be in the society, an association of people with that faith. That's, you know, there are people who get faith and come to Krishna consciousness, become attracted, understand Krishna is God. But the next step, when that faith increases, then we want to be with people who have that conception idea, and we begin to seek out that association. That is the next step. And until that step develops, you really can't enter into Ananga, Ananya Bhakti, that sense that this is the goal of life. And Nityananda Das says, well, what are the stages of progress for the Kanishtha Bhakta? It's very interesting how he describes it. Babaji says, well, suppose that a Kanishtha Adhikari worships the deity form of Bhagavan every day with faith, but is not free from karma, contamination of karma again, and extraneous desires. By chance, some guests come to him who happen to be bhaktas, and he welcomes and serves them, just as he would any other guest. The Kanishtha Bhakta, this is the beginning, observes the activities and behaviors of the devotees and gets a chance to hear their discussion of spiritual topics. In this way, he begins to develop great respect for the character of the devotees. So it even says in one verse of the Bhagavatam, it says Dharmasya Yapavargas. It's an exposition of Dharma. And it says that Dharma is meant for liberation. It's meant for devotion. And how is it meant for devotion? Because if you maintain a particular culture, even before you have faith in God, in a spiritual society like India of the days of yore, if you have that culture, you will receive guests. And among those guests, by occasion, it will be the bhaktas. And what is a devotee? He's one who glorifies Krishna, so you'll get a chance to hear those discussions. And if you're not offensive, you'll experience God, and your faith will increase. And at this point, Babaji's explaining very carefully, one becomes aware of his own defects. He begins to follow the behavior of the sadhus, and he begins to rectify his behavior, and then karma and gyan fade, and his heart becomes purified and increasingly free from extraneous desires. And then he begins to study the shastra, by regularly hearing the narrations of Krishna's pastimes and the fundamental and ontological truths about Krishna. And then his understanding, sambandhagyan, becomes progressively firmer. And as he accepts the transcendental nature of Sri Hari and of the holy name Srinam, And then of the angas of bhakti, chanting and hearing become important. And when this maturity of understanding becomes complete, he commits himself to pure devotional service, and then he attains a stage of Madhyama Adhikari. So he's explaining this to Nityananda Das. And at this point, you really begin to associate with the devotees. And you perceive that people who have this devotion are so superior to ordinary people. And you begin to regard them as your mentors or guides. So Nityananda Das then says, well, why is it that many Kanishtha Bhaktas do not progress? And Babaji explains. He said, well, if the Kanishtha Bhaktas associate mainly with people who are inimical, his immature level of eligibility for devotion, for bhakti, will fade, and then his desire and his attraction for karma and gyan will become prominent. or in some cases, remains on the same level. And it doesn't, well, it doesn't happen. Well, when he associates equally with the bhaktas and inimical people, that you know, on what circumstances can his advancement be assured? Babaji, his advancement is rapid when his association with the bhaktas become prominent. Nityanandadas, well, what is the nature of the Kanishtadakari's inclination towards sinful and pious activities? Babaji, in the preliminary stage, his inclination to sinful and pious activities will be like that of the karmis and jnanis. But as he progresses in bhakti, these propensities will be displayed, dispelled, and his inclination to please Sri Hari will become prominent. Nityananda Das, I have understood the situation of Kanishtha Adhikari. Now explain the symptoms of Madhyama Adhikari. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Gail, Hare Krishna.
So many. Where to start? I don't know. Well, one question I have is, I mean, I do have a question about, you know, Kanishtha and Majima, but I did want to ask you also about those people who, let's say they're lacking some bandhagyan and they think God is material. So such people... what does that mean, that they think God is an ordinary human being? Or what does it mean to think that God is something material?
Well, they don't think it's an ordinary human being, but they think it's some transformation of modes. And maybe even a transformation of the mode of goodness or whatever. But it's called Mayavad philosophy. Ultimately, you believe that the form of God is illusory, and their conception of material is illusory. It's illusion. And therefore, they somehow or other, in that form, they worship the form of God to steady their mind and attain a merging with the absolute reality. In other words, Prabhupada described it, it's like a woman and a prostitute. She enjoys the man, but not to serve the man, but to get the fruit of serving the man, which is the man's money. So they worship the form of God, not to please God, but to get the fruit of pleasing that form, which is to realize that it's illusory and that you can transcend it.
Okay. Can I ask another?
Yeah.
You said that, back to the Kanishtha Adhikari. The question was asked, well, how did he attained sadhu sangha? And the answer was that, well, from a previous life, maybe knowing or unknowing devotional service. But then you can ask, well, how did he get it in that previous life? And you can say, well, a life previous to that. So you can go on and on, but
what is the beginning point? I got it. What it's talking about now is when you come to a certain level where, you know, you have this realization. You come to a certain... Is that your phone?
Oh.
What's going on?
No, I don't know what that is.
Okay. You come to a certain level of realization. Just like in this life, we may come to pure devotional service. So it's due to the previous life, some connection, some sukriti, we come to the point where we're not just worshiping the deity for our own material desires, you know, to get our daughter married or some material benefit or going around Govardhan Hill for material benefit. But we actually have the concept and the faith that the ultimate shelter, the ultimate need is to love God. So, of course, we may have met a sadhu in the previous life, but it's accumulative. So the degree of sadhu sangha we have and the quality of it that we have mm-hmm. is due to the past sukriti, and it may be the service of devotee. Now, when you come to the question of origin, how does it mm-hmm. all start?
Mm-hmm.
You get into a really, really subtle and deep question
how God distributes his mercy.
Yes, and this is discussed. There's a whole explanation of it in the beginning chapter of Madhurya Kadambini. And honestly speaking, when these discussions are given, when you go so far back, I mean, how do we become qualified? Why should someone get a association, you know, at the very beginning? I think there's a lot of discussion, a lot of differences about it, a lot of different understandings of it. Are you still on?
Yes.
Gail, where are you?
I'm at home.
Okay. Ultimately, it's the mercy of a devotee. And somehow one attracts the mercy of a devotee. But if we want to get back to it, I guess we each have individual free will. We have individual free will. And with that free will, we may come to Dharma. Somehow or other, we may come to Dharma. I don't know, because we suffered in life or we inquired in life or what the case is, but we come to Dharma. And when we come to Dharma, then we open ourselves up to the association of devotees. And I'd like to feel that God somehow or other is responding to our desire, our core basic desire to not be selfish and to want to serve, and that somehow or other this is awakened and God reciprocates with that. That's the only understanding I could have, that it's somehow related to our own
nature,
free will, and somehow, well, not nature, but our free will to actually want to love, to serve. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One more, Gail.
Oh, thank you. I don't even know how to ask this properly, but, you know, my question, you know, just a little bit of vagueness about this point about seeing Krishna not just on the altar, but in the hearts of others, not just the pure devotee, but in ordinary living beings. You know, when we see a person, let's say a Majjhima Adhikari, when a Majjhima Adhikari sees Krishna or the deity in the hearts of all ordinary living beings, what does that actually mean?
Well, what's that? Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastini Suni Chaiva Supake Pandita Samadarshana. A pandit sees that equal. Well, what he sees is that God is, that every soul is a part of God, and God is accompanying every soul in their direction in life. So he sees that God is also in the heart of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But when one advances in devotional service and actually is able to turn to God, then the voice of God and the manifestation of God becomes more prominent in someone. Otherwise, he's just a silent witness. But actually, one who's deep in Krishna consciousness, God is fully awakened in that person's heart.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees directly the communion of that soul with God.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, that Majjhima Arika. Okay. All right. You want to go on?
Okay, Gail. I probably have to go because there's so much happening. Anybody else to say hello today?
Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Prabhu Maharaj, Bhagavatam Bhaktadas.
Govardhan, wonderful. How are your classes going on Saturday?
Well, they're going on very good, Maharaj. Very good.
Good, that's nice. What are you teaching now?
Actually, I'm in 3rd chapter, 16th sloka. And last week, Saturday, I went to Long Island, New York. There was a lot of, like, 40, 50 devotees, new devotees. I gave a class on Damodar Leela.
Really? You went to Long Island? Where?
Yes, Maharaj. One of the devotees here, his brother lives in Long Island, so his friends, like 15 families, came all together. They wanted me to do a class, so we did kirtan, and I gave Damodar Leela class for about... It went on 2 hours class, Maharaj.
Wonderful, wonderful. That's such nice news. Wonderful, Govardhan.
All your mercy, Maharaj. All your mercy.
Well, I like that you're listening and you're able to repeat. That's wonderful. Okay, good. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we can end today. Panchakopa Jivis.